I'm very happy now to welcome back to the program Jeff Haas. He is an activist, author, and civil rights attorney, and Barbara Grothis, who is an artist and activist. And Barbara is one of the six anti-nuclear protesters who is facing jail time. There is a hearing on Wednesday coming up?
It's an actual trial up in Los Alamos on Wednesday morning at 9 a.m.
Okay. So welcome, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you.
So this is about a peaceful protest that you were involved with on Hiroshima Day, which happens every August. It's the anniversary of the dropping of the atomic bomb, and people tend to go up to Los Alamos and demonstrate at that time. What happened this past year?
Well, a few of us went to Los Alamos to try to have a dialogue and participate in ongoing discussions about the use and production of nuclear weapons and nuclear technology in Los Alamos, and whether or not we should be continuing on that path, knowing all the things we know about nuclear power, Fukushima, the environment, contamination, health effects, everything. And we were there to have a dialogue about that, as has been going on for many years.
And what happened after that? I mean, did you have your dialogue?
Oh, well, no, not really. I mean, now they arrested us, so we weren't able to continue trying to have a dialogue. And so now I guess we have to try to have that dialogue in the courts.
So what actually happened? I mean, were you carrying signs and marching around, or?
We did have signs. We did walk around. And yes, there were people there, and the lab was pretty amped up. They had recently had the invasion at Tennessee, where, 80-year-old people crawled through fences for a couple hours and posted some signs on the nuclear facility at Oak Ridge, and they were very amped up about that. They were extremely concerned that we were going to be successful in, trying to invade the laboratory or something, which I don't believe anybody had the idea that we would be doing that, but the lab seemed to be very concerned about that. Or let's just say Bechtel. I mean, they have a private security force, Save Our Country, SOC, that they deploy, like most corporations now seem to have these private security forces, and they took us into custody.
But, I mean, what, Jeff, were they taken into custody for and charged with?
What the lab is claiming is that they basically, what in fact happened is they stood in front of the lab with signs and protest. And the lab is claiming that
in public space
on a roadway. The lab is claiming that they blocked the roadway and that they refused to leave that roadway when told to by an officer. And also they're charged with obstructing movement, trespass, and refusing to obey an officer.
That true, Barbara?
We are charged with those things.
No,
yes.
But is it true that you did those things?
I'd rather. She's going to testify at the trial,
okay.
So I don't really have her say that one thing or another. We will testify about what we did. We're not ashamed of it, but I also want to wait to save some drama for the trial.
So basically, there's a kind of they're threatening the six of you with almost a half a year in jail.
Plus $1,500
for standing in the road.
Right.
Yeah, it really seems, and interestingly enough, at the demonstration, and I and another lawyer were there, we asked the police chief, well, what are they going to be charged with if they refuse to leave the road? And we were told traffic violations. Instead, they charged them with petty misdemeanors, which, as you pointed out, each one of which could involve 90 days in jail or a total of 179 days in jail.
Now, is this different from any other year? I mean, it seems like every year you guys go up there and do the same kind of thing.
It is different. It's almost like they've created a special court for this. In the past, it's gone to magistrate court, where you have a right to substitute judge, and you can have a right to a jury trial depending on what the charges are. This goes to municipal court. The only judge there was the former police chief of Los Alamos, who's not a lawyer. So on the one hand, the procedure is rather informal, and all of their witnesses are police officers. So it's like we assume that the judge and the police officers knew each other, either certainly in a professional, if not in a personal capacity. In this particular court, which is the only court, you don't have a right to substitute judge automatically, which you do in every other court in New Mexico. So we do feel like they've sort of set it up so that they could, you know, could be a railroad, or we really don't have many rights in this court.
Very interesting. So, I mean, your actions are the same as every other year, but the result is different. That's what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah, it certainly seems like what they're facing is more serious, and they have less options. We don't have a right to a jury trial. We don't have a right to name a judge, and particularly the judge who's sitting is the former police chief.
And so the defense is basically, I mean, you are defending these people for free speech.
Right. Basically, they went there, absolutely, to get out the message, to get out the message of what the lab does, that it's creating nuclear weapons, that it's creating radioactive air, water, and dirt that affect all the people of New Mexico. And I think the other message is, what a waste of resources. We spend 52 times more on the military than we do on abating climate change. What is the real national security threat? And there's a lot of reports from the armed forces that it's climate change and the disruption and floods and internecine warfare that's going to come from fighting over limited resources that are going to be the real threat. We're ignoring that, and we're creating archaic nuclear weapons, which themselves are dangerous.
So,
and unusable. I mean, they're not really something you can use much. They cost a lot of money, and who wants to see them? I mean, nobody wants to see nuclear weapons used ever again. So we had this, you know, mutual assured destruction policy for years and years, and now, you know, MAD, MAD, and now it's an ineffective policy in the sense that all these weapons can't be used.
And so that's the message. There's another wasted resource, I think, to be brought into this discussion, which is jailing peaceful people for exercising their free right of speech at taxpayer expense for ridiculously extended periods of time.
Absolutely, and it'll be interesting to see.
If I may say so.
I think it'll be interesting to see how much Los Alamos really wants to do that, you know, and how much they would want the publicity that comes from putting peaceful demonstrators in their jails for several days. In addition to being dangerous, it's illegal for the United States to build their nuclear arsenal. As members of the Non-Proliferation Treaty, which we claim to be enforcing against Iran, we're supposed to work towards disarmament. Last week, as part of the NDAA that was passed and signed by President Obama, there's an extension of the lab to build a billion-dollar plutonium manufacturer factory at Los Alamos. This supposedly had been put on hold because the government and the armed forces feel it's wasteful and unnecessary. But politically, and because of the power of Bechtel and other lobbyists, they've put in this bill that they want to have this plutonium pit manufacturing plant in Los Alamos, which is in direct violation of the Non-Proliferation Treaty, which talks about disarmament, not expanding your arms, your nuclear arms.
Yeah, I just would like to say about Bechtel a couple of things. First of all, the cost of managing the laboratory when it was under the University of California was something around or a little under $30 million a year. And then we had these supposed security incidents after 9/11 in which, you know, this new idea of these public-private partnerships was promoted as a cost-saving, more efficient, and get these corporations in there because, you know, business does so everything so much better than government, more efficiently, and et cetera. Well, the cost of managing the laboratory under Bechtel has gone from something under $30 million a year to $100 million. Now, that's a direct management cost that they are just putting in their pockets. We are paying for it. Bechtel, honestly, the workers, if you talk to people who work in Los Alamos, they despise the corporation. They've created job insecurity. They have short-term contracts with few benefits. They're undermining the fabric of the community with these job insecurity and other sort of corporate tactics that are destructive of communities. And it is damaging to the whole economic structure of Los Alamos. I mean, we're talking about a community that is one of the wealthiest in the United States, and yet they're held hostage by the whims of this enormous corporation that has a terrible reputation across the country as well for milking taxpayer dollars. And in fact, just yesterday or the day before, there was information that they were supposed to have $230 or so million dollar new security system that they were funded for and supposed to have up and operating last summer. Well, it isn't up and operating, and they're now saying it's not going to be ready till next summer, and they need $41 million more to put it up. I mean, these kinds of monies are enormous. It's terrible that they are considered to be some kind of managers. They are managing for themselves to make enormous profits at taxpayer expense. And I really find this offensive, knowing that we're talking about cutting back money for senior citizens who are on Social Security, asking people to work longer in their lives. Who are these people who think that people who've been pouring cement their whole lives, digging ditches, you know, working in the streets, doing infrastructure in our country, are going to work till they're 70. I mean, it's completely outrageous what they're telling us we have to do under this new austerity. And yet we have these corporations with private security forces and cost overruns and no oversight for what these people are doing. In fact, their hands are at the trough, as Jeff just said, you know, more money for this plutonium pit facility.
I think there really needs to be much more of a conversation about the nature of enterprise and profit making, because it's one thing if you invent some cool thing, manufacture it, sell it, people want it, you make a profit. It's another thing to have your profit be required to come out of taxpayers' pockets. It's a model that I think needs to really be understood and discussed.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, and it seems like when you try to make basic changes in this society, for example, in the energy system, and we need renewable energy and solar and wind, what do you come up against? People who want to make the profit, who have oil and gas and coal.
Yeah.
And they determine our energy policy, just like Bechtel and other lobbyists determine even our defense policy. We're putting $1 trillion into a plane, an F-35, that's not functional, but it makes money for a lot of corporations. And, of course, the labs are an extreme example of that, because they're very costly in the way they use money. And we think that you know, there should be oversight. And basically, they shouldn't be making nuclear weapons anymore. It's illegal under international law. It's dangerous. We use them to threaten other countries. We allow our friends like Israel to have nuclear weapons without anybody overlooking them, and yet we try to say that Iran, where there's no evidence of nuclear weapons, is subject to these incredibly terrible sanctions.
I would also like to say that there's a lot of fabulous brainiacs up there who really, who I know for a fact would really like to be working on renewable energy.
Well, certainly that's where the resources should be going. I'm not sure that the lab is the best, most useful way for them to use their skills, but certainly their brain power and other people's brain power should be going towards developing renewable energy.
Absolutely. And, you know, the situation, for example, with Fukushima, I mean, my gosh, we're talking about all the problems that are rampant in the nuclear industry for energy, and that situation is one that is still way out of control. We have so many plants in the United States that have been shut down for various different reasons. This was supposed to be affordable power, oh, too cheap to meter. The taxpayers have been paying endless amounts of money to these corporations to build these facilities that are unsafe. And places like Los Alamos, if we're going to have things like nuclear power, they should be working on how to make it safe, if it's possible to do so, which I doubt.
So back to the trial. The trial is happening this Wednesday. We're talking to Barbara Grothis, artist and activist, and Jeff Haas, attorney and activist and author, about this trial of the six protesters who have been arrested and charged with various misdemeanor violations for their activities on Hiroshima Day in August. And so what's going to happen? I mean, there's a judge, no jury. Six people will be tried together, and...
Well, I think that one of the questions is going to be how much are people going to be allowed to explain why they went there, what they did, and what the reason for protesting at the lab is. And so we're hoping that they will get an opportunity to explain what they did and why they did it. And I think there's going to be... that's what we'll have to see. We expect the trial to go quickly. It's possible. The verdict will be the same day. There will also be a sentencing hearing if they're found guilty, and we hope at least in that they're going to be able to put forth who they are and what they did. And we're going to urge the judge to recognize the legitimacy of their protest, that this was not a personal thing. It was a nonviolent thing. It was done for the public good. And basically it was justified under international law, which requires citizens to step up. Under Nuremberg, when you see your government doing something wrong and illegal, which is the use of manufacture of nuclear weapons, you have a duty to stand up and protest it. And I think these people, these six, were carrying out that duty under international and humanitarian law.
If anybody wants to go, in other words, people listening to this program, should they show up, or how can people participate if they want to?
Sure. We would love to have a courtroom full of people showing support for this kind of a dialogue and discussion, for the right of free speech and all of those other kind of things at 9 o'clock on January 9th, which is Wednesday, at the municipal court or the court complex in Los Alamos, which is just on the end of Ashley Pond. It's a brand new facility. It's very large, and I don't think it will be hard for people to find where we are on Wednesday morning at 9 o'clock.
Absolutely. We invite people to come to court and show the judge their concern for what the defendants are protesting about, and also if they want to come with signs and banners and outside the courtroom and show how they feel there, that would be wonderful. So it's 9 a.m. Wednesday at the Los Alamos Courthouse right next to Ashley Pond.
Jeff Haas is a civil rights attorney, activist, and author. Barbara Grothis is an activist and artist, and she is one of the six anti-nuclear protesters, the Los Alamos Six, as you were calling yourselves. I want to thank you both for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you for having us. We appreciate the opportunity.
Much. I'm very happy now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Edie Tsong. She is founder of the Cut and Paste Society. Sharifa Lookman is here. She's a senior at New Mexico School for the Arts. And Ariana Sullivan is a senior in creative writing at the Santa Fe University of Art and Design. And we are here to talk about the project called Snow Poems. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much for having us here today.
It's a great pleasure. So, Snow Poems, what's that all about?
So, Snow Poems is a project that grew out of the Cut and Paste Society. And we're a group of women writers and artists who started getting together for the past 2 years just for a creative community. And just through sharing our work and talking about what we do, the idea kind of just surfaced. And so what it is that we use temporary decorative spray snows to stencil original poetry on windows. And the letters are huge block letters, are 10 inches tall, so you can read the poetry as you're walking down the sidewalk or driving by.
And so, I mean, we're talking haikus as opposed to epics kind of thing in terms of the length of the poem.
Yeah, and maybe even shorter than a haiku. So last year we did the project for the first time at New Mexico School for the Arts, and Sharifa was a part of that. And we covered the windows of the school. So we had 27 or 28 poems, and some were just words. Like on the front doors, I wrote a poem that said, "Wander, wonder."
And so now you have them all over the city. Now, each of the three of you has actually written some of the poems that are there. Is that correct?
No, I mean, I actually haven't, and I don't know if Ariana has either.
Oh, okay.
We essentially went through a curation process where citizens from Santa Fe and kids from schools and everything, they submitted poems, and then we chose which one for each window.
Oh, okay.
So it's a variety of voices.
Right, right. And so where are some of these poems?
All over the place.
I'm sure people have seen them, but you might not have been aware. I mean, this is the thing. It's like a kind of cultivating, it seems like it's kind of about cultivating awareness.
Yeah, and part of that will be a map that Edie is putting together that shows all of the buildings where you can go see a poem in Santa Fe.
What are a few of them? Like, just name one or two.
The Southside Library. We're putting one up at the downtown library this afternoon. The convention center, the community gallery.
There's also around in the schools, so at New Mexico School for the Arts, there's one, and at the Santa Fe University of Art and Design, as well as one that we did yesterday, which is really exciting, is at the gazebo in front of REI.
Nice.
And so that's a great place for a lot of tourists to see, as well as people coming from Albuquerque on the Rail Runner.
So the snow poems that are on windows now, and there's going to be at least 40 windows around town, it's just kind of one part of the entire project. It's been really exciting. Like Sharifa said, there was open submissions from our website, and we had several members of Cut and Paste Society teach workshops at Turquoise Trail Elementary. That was Kirsten and Elizabeth Lindy. And Katie McCauley taught a workshop at Carlos Gilbert Elementary. So it's been, and Nicole Davis of Santa Fe Art Institute, she did a workshop with students, seventh graders at DeVargas Middle School, and they have a poem up on their cafeteria window.
Nice. Are you, do you want to tell us or read us or recite any of the poems?
Yeah, actually, Che, do you want to recite the poem that we put up on Jerry Apodaca building? So Che has been dragged around everywhere, so now she
Now we're talking about a little girl here.
Yeah.
Second grade?
Do you want to tell them what school you go to and what grade you're in?
I go to Wick-Gormley, and I'm 7 years old.
Okay. Excellent.
So this is the poem that's on the Jerry Apodaca Education Building.
A broken raven wing, snagged on a branch, marked like a flag, the entry to my awakening.
Beautiful.
So that's a poem by Michelle Laflamme Childs, and that was one of the funnest installations we did, because we had Pete Kutzoff, PK Works, and Crocker Limited, they helped us with scaffolding, and we were like 20 feet in the air. So five of us installing the poem at once, all at different levels.
Nice. Now, this is partly a collaboration with the Santa Fe Art Institute, is that correct?
Yeah, we're partnering with the Santa Fe Art Institute, which is really great. We're Snow Poems is part of their community program, and that it's been really great to work with them.
So people can basically open their eyes, look around, and see these poems all over the city.
Yeah, basically. And it's, you know, one of the fun processes, parts of the program right now is that poems are popping up. We started installing in the schools in mid-December, and then we've really hit it hard these past 2 weeks. And there's not really any signage for the program, for the project, and we'll be putting together a map that should come out. Julie Ruth from Loca Creative and Nicole Rasmussen are putting together a map, and that'll be available at all Snow Poems locations at the end of January.
And so this stays up, what, until the until the equinox, or?
No, it's a totally, you know, one of the ideas with the project is it's totally seasonal. So it's up during the dead of winter when there's kind of nothing to make us through if we're not snowboarders.
Right.
And, and then, and it was, it came about, like, when I heard this prayer for the solstice last year, this woman, Virginia Pasternak, said, "Now we enter winter, the darkness of winter, as a time of reflection and incubation of ideas." And so that's kind of what the poems are about. And as soon at the end of February, we have our closing reception, February 22nd. It's going to be at the Santa Fe Community Gallery with walking tours downtown. And then the poems will get washed away. And we'll notice the light changing at that time. And then when we did it at the high school last year, it was actually such a beautiful feeling. You know, the poems are beautiful as they are, so it's nice to have them up. But then as you wash away the poems, it's so amazing to see all the light come in for spring.
Right. Yeah, there's a kind of, like when the monks were here doing their sand mandala, which is this beautiful thing, and then they just sweep it away. There's a sense of impermanence with all of that.
Uh-huh. So, and it's a temporary project. So another thing, you know, we'll have the maps that will act kind of as a souvenir, as a project. But at the end of the project, we also want to print a book of postcards. So we're still trying to raise money for that.
Nice. Which you can then sell or give away, which has the actual poems in them?
Yeah, there will be a picture of a location and then the poem printed on the back, and then you could just post a postcard to a friend.
Beautiful. Now, you are both students. Sharifa, you're in the Santa Fe, the New Mexico School for the Arts, and Ariana, you're at the Santa Fe University of Art and Design. Tell us more about your work. You, Ariana, are a poet. You do creative writing. Do you do short stories?
I write a lot of poetry and this funny genre called creative nonfiction.
Right.
And didn't submit a poem to Snow Poems because I was scared about bad snow metaphors and the possible inevitability of that.
Do you know, but we did have, like, we had three free poetry workshops before we start, you know, as a way to call poetry. So Lauren Camp, Nicholas Chiarella, and Jamie Figueroa taught, and Ariana came to those workshops, as did Sharifa. And they did write a lot of poetry during this time.
Yeah, kind of like the windows are just sort of on the street, unannounced in a way, at least until the illumination. The workshops were sort of, it was a chance for the community to interact with poetry without necessarily being a poet or a professional. So it was neat how those paralleled as well.
And you are a visual artist?
Yes.
Sharifa?
Mm-hmm.
Tell us more about your work.
Well, I'm specifically interested in painting and oil painting. But I was really interested in the snow poems because I love reading. I'm obsessed with literature. Like, I always have a book in my purse and a book in everywhere.
Right.
So it was really interesting having this dialogue between words, but then making it so visual. So it's like, it's as much visual arts as it is, like, creative writing and just this, like, really interesting manipulation of words.
Yeah, and what Sharifa brings up is just the beauty of it. And one of the layers of the project is just, you know, we're so totally enticed by the digital world these days. And I wanted to, part of the project is how can we make our spaces beautiful, that we want to be there. And the whole installation process is so physical, like, you know, just each letter is its own stencil. And, you know, the words have become physical, the words become light, the words become shadow that mark the space.
So the Cut and Paste Society, tell us a little bit more about that.
So we've been meeting for the past 2 years, and for me as an, I started it because for me as an artist, I always did my work on residencies, and where you run off and you have this isolated period of time where no one bothers you and you just do whatever you want. And then now as a mother, and so many of us are mothers and teachers, we couldn't really just run off and go to La La Land.
Go to a residency, right?
Yeah. So it was a way to kind of get creative community, support each other, have dialogue. And that's been a lifesaver for me, just to be around creative women and to talk about things we care about rather than just kind of the details of life.
And there is a Facebook page that people can go to.
Yeah, it's facebook.com/snowpoems, and then you can keep up to date with the installations as they happen. And we also have a website, www.snowpoemsproject.com.
Snowpoemsproject.com.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can find out more about it. And there's a donation button for anyone who wants to make a PayPal donation.
Wonderful. So Edie Tsang is founder of the Cut and Paste Society. Sharifa Lookman is at the New Mexico School for the Arts. And Ariana Sullivan is at the Santa Fe University of Art and Design. And Snow Poems goes on through, what'd you say, the end of February?
Yeah, the closing ceremony is called Night of Illumination. It's February 22nd, a Friday evening at the Santa Fe Community Gallery, 6 to 8 p.m. And then the poems will be down about March 1st.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you for being here. And ladies and gentlemen, look around you and you will see the poems.
Thank you so much, Marie Charlotte.
Thank you all. And I'm delighted now to welcome back to the program Ben Swan of the Santa Fe Animal Shelter and Humane Society. Welcome.
Hi, Mary Charlotte. Glad to be back.
And we are also joined today by Iris Klimchuk. She is a member of the New Mexico House Rabbit Society, and she's a bunny volunteer at the Santa Fe Animal Shelter. Welcome.
Hi, Mary Charlotte. Thanks for having me.
It's wonderful to have you both. And we always talk about dogs. We often talk about cats. I don't think I've ever really done a whole show on rabbits, but it turns out rabbits are a very common pet. Is that right?
Yes. A lot of people get rabbits, and they make wonderful, wonderful pets. They're intelligent, affectionate, inquisitive animals with a whole range of personalities. They can be, you know, really bold, timid, gentle, playful, rambunctious,
just like everybody else,
just like other animals. But there are a lot of fun to have in the house.
Yeah, as you know, Mary Charlotte, that we always talk about dogs and cats, but we always have a number of rabbits for adoption at the shelter, and they are the third most relinquished animal in the shelters nationwide. People don't realize that these domesticated rabbits, A, make awesome pets, but B, live up to 10, 12 years and develop personalities that are just very unique for them. So they are really the total package for an animal companion, and they're unfortunately often overlooked. I mean, we see these rabbits jumping around, but we don't make the connection that a different breed, a different type of rabbit can make a great house companion.
Why are they often relinquished?
Well, I think a lot of people tend to get a rabbit on impulse. You know, unfortunately, around Easter, a lot of people want to get a baby bunny because they think it would be cute. And they don't really know very much about the rabbit's behavior. And this can pose a problem. That cute little bunny will grow up, and a rabbit is a rabbit and not a cat and a dog. And when behavioral issues arise, people often don't know how to handle them.
What are some behavioral issues that arise for rabbits?
Well, some things that often happen, rabbits do have a tendency to chew. They have teeth which continuously grow, and they need to wear those teeth down.
Oh, those two big front teeth?
Well, all their teeth, actually, Mary Charlotte.
Oh, okay.
They tend to seek out things in the house like electrical cords. If you bring a rabbit into your home, you do need to rabbit-proof it, which basically means similar to the way you would toddler-proof a house.
Or puppy-proof a house.
Or puppy-proof a house. Yeah. You know, you have to get down and look at things at their level and either block access to things or hide the electrical cords.
Right.
That chewing activity can be redirected, though, with chew toys for a rabbit. There are a whole variety of chew toys.
Are they different from dog chew toys?
They are. Rabbits need to have chew toys that are edible. Things like willow wisps or pine cones make great chew toys. there's a whole range of things that can be bought at pet stores or on the internet for rabbits to chew. And that kind of helps stop their tendency to seek
to
out things.
To destroy your house.
And whereas, you know, some people understand that, you know, a cat might accidentally tear up curtains with its claws and we'll get a cat tree, a lot of people will just give up on the rabbit the first time something in the house gets destroyed.
Right.
You know, Iris and the House Rabbit Society volunteers who come to our shelter, they do an awesome job just educating the public and our staff members and volunteers about rabbits and rabbit care. It's, you know, they're not that difficult in a lot of ways, and I don't want to, like, focus on what rabbits might do, but they do bring a lot of joy into people's lives, and they're just fun to have. And it is an educational process. I know that I had rabbits growing up, and I thought I did well by them, but obviously now that I've learned a lot more, and I think that when I learned about rabbits is when I studied in Germany, and a friend of mine had a pet rabbit named Harvey. And that rabbit just jumped around everywhere, and all of a sudden I realized, oh, this is a different breed of an animal. And they can. And then when I met the House Rabbit Society members, volunteers, I was just, you open up your lives to these animals. Any being is like that in a lot of ways. So tell me, Iris, what are some of the joys that you get from having your rabbits, and how many rabbits do you have anyway, Elm?
Well, I have 5 rabbits of my own that were rescued from a university campus up in British Columbia.
Oh, heavens. Were they experimenting on them?
No, they weren't experimental rabbits, but unfortunately, they were rabbits that had been dumped on the campus and left to multiply. Rabbits will do what rabbits will do, and two bunnies become too many bunnies very quickly.
Yeah.
And the situation had gotten so bad that the university had announced a cull of the rabbits. And fortunately, there was a big outcry, and there were enough volunteers to rally and to get those rabbits to sanctuary. My way of helping was to take a few of the young rabbits myself.
Yeah.
And so 4 of mine are rescue rabbits. And 1 I did adopt from the Santa Fe shelter since I've been volunteering there.
Now, what kind of exercise do they need?
Well, you know, their wild cousins roam about 5 miles a day. So a house rabbit needs to have at least 2 to 3 hours of time outside its enclosure to run and jump and explore the house.
Now, do you keep it in a cage when you sleep, or do you let them be free like a dog would be free? Or?
Well, because I have 5 rabbits, I actually have a small office area, small room that's my dedicated bunny room with furniture in there. And
so that's where they can use the phone and
where the rabbit condo is.
The
and
internet, you know. look at the bunny site.
So they do, when I am not in the house at home to watch them, that is where they stay. But when I'm at home and can watch them, then they're scampering around my room. They were scampering under my Christmas tree, having a great time.
How long do they live?
Well, as Ben said, they can live 8 to 10 years, so that is quite a long time. Most people don't realize that a rabbit that's properly cared for can live that long.
Are the domesticated rabbits, or the kind of pet rabbits that we're talking about, are they able to live in the wild, or are they really a different kind of breed?
That's
no, they're really a totally different breed. You know, unfortunately, a lot of people decide, you know, if they don't want their rabbit, they might let it go in a park or something. And a rabbit will not survive for more than a couple hours, because a domesticated rabbit does depend very much on human care, and
they'll get eaten.
It's a whole different
in New
kind
Mexico
of rabbit.
there are too many predators out there, birds of prey, coyotes, dogs that are roaming, even cats,
right?
It's a totally different animal. They haven't been domesticated as long as cats and dogs, New Mexico House Rabbit Society and the National House Rabbit Society is really working to help people understand that rabbits can live in the home with people like cats and dogs.
And that they and as you probably know, that rabbits can be litter box trained as well.
Oh, is that right? Are
yes.
you litter box
Mine
trained?
Mine are litter box trained. They're very clean animals.
Do they lick each other?
They groom each other. If you see two rabbits that are bonded, you know, and in love, it is the sweetest thing, really, to observe.
Is it better to have two?
Well, you know, I always think any companion animal likes to have a friend. And, you know, my preference is for every bunny to have another bunny, but not everybody is able to do that. And if you do have a solo rabbit, then you need to really spend time with that rabbit, and you sort of are their whole world.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you have to be careful. Some bunnies, they naturally don't get along well. So you have to, and that's why Iris and her volunteers are really great in making sure that the bunnies would get along well together, and the rabbit fights are not anything that you really want to deal with.
Rabbit fights?
Right. Two strange rabbits have a tendency to attack one another.
Oh, dear.
And a lot of people don't realize that when they bring a second rabbit home to their existing rabbit, that it's not necessarily going to be love at first sight. There is a bonding process often that has to take place. One of the things that can be done is, you know, to take the two rabbits that don't know each other and put them in a carrier and drive them around in a car for short periods of time, and that sort of helps them, gently stresses them a little bit and makes them seek solace from each other. And over time, as that's done repeatedly, they do learn to accept each other in the home as well.
Very interesting. Now, are these, I don't know if I should ask this, but are these the same kind of rabbits that people eat?
Some of these breeds, I guess, are raised for meat. And I suspect some of the ones we see coming into the shelter probably were bred for that purpose.
Yeah.
Regardless, they make wonderful, wonderful pets. But they do need to be indoors in New Mexico due to the temperature extremes. Rabbits don't do very well in extreme heat, nor do they do well in extreme cold.
Do you let them out in the summer? Into your yard? Or?
You know, I have a walled courtyard area that's completely fenced off and walled in. And I do let my bunnies out, actually, twice a day in the summertime, early in the morning and late in the evening after it cools off again. And my bunnies are just like dogs. You know, I'll feed them in the morning and they'll hop to the front door and they'll want to be let out into the courtyard and they'll stay out there, not so long in the winter when it's cold, but they do like to stretch their legs, and when it snows they love to play in the snow. And
yeah, Iris was telling us that she brought in some snow for the shelter bunnies and they just went crazy with it.
Snow bunnies.
Yeah. I took an empty litter box and scooped up some snow, and the bunnies just went for it like crazy.
So when you have bunnies in the animal shelter, you come and volunteer and just exercise them and pat them and stuff?
That's right. I help socialize them. Some of them arrive quite frightened and scared. Of course, you don't know the whole story about their past history. Some of them are very timid. Some are quite fearful. Some may have been, you know, outdoor hutch rabbits and been quite socially isolated and not had much human contact. And other rabbits are great, but they all need to be handled, to be talked to be played with. They need exercise.
Just like every other companion animal, if they aren't socialized, they become frightened of many things. And it's really amazing to see Iris and the other House Rabbit Society volunteers come into the shelter and set up these little cages and little play areas and watch the bunnies just hop around. And she's always in the lobby area, in the foyer area of our shelter, of the adoption center, and usually before people start coming in and bringing in dogs and cats and stuff like that. But it is really unique. It's a very special time when the bunnies are out running around. And a lot of them just go wherever they want to go. Right.
Yeah, they like to explore, and they go all through the lobby, and and it's quite cute to watch.
And I mean, you don't, if you're gonna get a rabbit, and we're gonna give people the opportunity to get a rabbit, you still don't want to get it just because it's cute. And you don't want to get it just for Easter. And
no.
You were saying before we went on the air that people give them away as prizes, and that's all not good. But if you actually want to consider having a bunny for a pet. And I imagine that, like, if maybe somebody's older and they're more sedentary and they can't walk a dog, or maybe they're allergic to cats or whatever, it would be a wonderful pet.
It can be. You know, my rabbits sit and watch TV with me. They hop up on the couch.
What are their favorite shows?
Playboy Channel. No,
well, I tend to watch the highbrow stuff like Masterpiece Theater and.
Oh, Downton Abbey rabbits.
That's
Did they
right.
have the downstairs rabbits and the upstairs rabbits?
Okay, well, there's a rabbit adoption event this coming Sunday, the 13th of January, from 12 to 4 at PetSmart. So anybody who wants to even consider adopting a bunny can go down to PetSmart on Zafirano here in Santa Fe and not only look at the wonderful available bunnies, but also talk to people about what's involved in getting a bunny.
That's right. And for people who already have a bunny in the area, New Mexico House Rabbit Society will be providing free nail trims. And that's part of the grooming of the animal. And some people find that quite challenging thing to do. And we are happy to do that, to provide that service for free.
That's
on
fantastic.
Sunday.
Right, yeah, and they can also learn more about rabbits and why they make such special animals. And we'll also have dogs and cats and everything else available for adoption there.
Oh, so you'll have other animals.
Yes.
It's not just a bunny event.
It's the focus is bunnies, but we always want to have animals available for adoption because we're always looking for families. We've had a great, you know, the winter has been kind of slow, but we, you know, right after the holidays, we were quite busy. We're very happy about that. One day just recently, we adopted over 13 animals, so that was great for like a midweek day. So
amazing.
It was awesome. So
super. And just yesterday, I think there was a rabbit adopted.
That's true.
And we have quite a few at the shelter right now. And it's the winter time is a great time to snuggle in with bunnies.
And I would like to let people know that some of the bunnies up for adoption include Buckeye, Twinkle, Sprinkles, Cruise, Rhapsody, and Clarkson.
Yes.
And we
also
cute.
And I brought some dogs and cats, too, just in case.
Oh, okay. Well, we only have a moment or two left, but let's talk about a beautiful dog named Billy, who is a 5-year-old tricolor medium-sized dog with a kind of philosophical expression on his face.
That's a Bill Hutchison look, don't you think?
Yeah, it looks like he's getting his master's in philosophy at a large northern university.
Yes.
And there is a cat named Dandy Lion, who is an older male cat with also, I mean, this is a kind of philosophical day. Maybe it's the new year, but this cat also has a kind of profound, world-wise expression on his face.
Meow.
Meow. Ben Swan is with the Santa Fe Animal Shelter and Humane Society, and Iris Klimchuk is with the New Mexico House Rabbit Society. I want to thank you both so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte. Thank you, Mary Charlotte. It was our pleasure.
And by the way, there is a rabbit website, which is newmexicohrs.org. There's a Facebook page. There's a national site called rabbit.org. And there's a New Mexico House Rabbit Society helpline, and the number is 505-435-9916 for general information or advice about bunnies.